Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 99 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast exclusively available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. One quick note before we dive into our guest this week. This show is trying to get a few more ratings and reviews on iTunes, guys. So if you're on iTunes and you haven't rated and reviewed the show, hopefully it's a five-star rating. That would be kind of helpful as well, but it would really help us if you would go over to iTunes into the podcast section and give us a nice rating and review over there, guys. It really helps us gain a larger audience and have some people who haven't found us yet find the show. So greatly appreciate that, gang. Now to our guest.
Barry. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The People's Podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that.
And now I am lucky to be joined on the line with the man Grant of the Grant and Danny Show on 106.7 The Fan in the midday, Grant Paulson. Grant, welcome back to the Nats GM Show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Grant, and thank you so very much for coming back on the show. I greatly appreciate it. The response the first time we had you on was tremendous. We went back and talked Letterman days and your Super Bowl appearances and everything else, so I'll link that obviously in the interview, but that was a great interview. So thank you so much for coming back.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Happy to do it.
So, Grant, let's start with the Nationals kind of first and foremost. Team is 28-17, I believe, as we're recording this. I believe they're down a run in the seventh inning in the afternoon game against Seattle, but I don't want to give it a negative spin, but it does feel like they're doing it a little bit with smoke and mirrors right now. Kind of what are your thoughts on the team 45 games in?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they've definitely got some warts. Every team does. I don't know that there's a club in baseball right now that doesn't have some type of fatal flaw that could bite them ultimately if they don't correct it. The problem for the Nationals is that the issues that they have today, a couple of months in, are the same issues we forecasted before the season started. And that normally makes it feel a little bit worse. You know, we were worried, I think, as a fan base and people that follow them, this bullpen's going to be a mess. And not only has it been that, but I would even say it's been worse than anticipated. The rotational depth was perceived as an issue. And you know, here we are. Tanner Roark struggled a little bit, which is a surprise. But you know, he's your number three, and Gio's your number four. And those guys have pitched well enough. You're not worried a lot about them. But there hadn't been a fifth starter. Joe Ross just got recalled and finally had a good eight-inning outing. And you hope that that's a sign of things to come. But I mean, you've had Jacob Turner making starts. You had Jeremy Guthrie throw and get obliterated. So that was something before the season started where you thought, you know, they don't really have the normal depth and as far as starting pitching they normally do if somebody goes down. And luckily they've been healthy, but it's been proven at this point that they're not going to be able to replace, you know, in the past, whether it was Strasburg injury or something happened with Gio or Roark. They just don't have those proven major league quality arms waiting in the wings. So that's a little bit of an issue. The lineup's been outstanding, but just on nights where everyone's not mashing and you can't be up four or five, six runs going into the late innings, it's a struggle. So I definitely think that you're right. As good as they are, and they've been the best team in the NL for most of, you know, the first quarter of this season, there's a couple of glaring deficiencies that they're going to have to clean up, and Mike Rizzo's going to have some work to do. But the fact is, if you just look at their record and where they are in the standings, you know, the NL East isn't good. The Mets are and the Braves and the Phillies are just not on the same level as them. So it looks as though they're going to be able to cruise for a little while here. And then lastly, I would say that there is nobody definitively better in the National League. So it's not like there's a lot to worry about. But if you're an Nats fan, I would just keep tabs on that bullpen, that starting rotation depth, the Adam Eaton injury hurt, and hope that Mike Rizzo's got a trick or two up his sleeves come late July.
Well, let me start with the bullpen with you. We saw Glover named the closer last night after a pretty impressive, I guess it wasn't a save opportunity technically, but how are you feeling about Glover in the ninth inning and Kelly is at least healthy now. He had a nice outing last night as well. He struggled thus far. I mean, is that kind of at least starting to feel a little more solidified in the eighth, ninth inning for you, or are we going to have to go?
Yeah, I think it's getting back to probably what always should have been the case. I didn't like the naming of Blake Treinen as the closer initially. I liked the role that he carved out over the last couple of seasons. I just don't know him very well personally, but I know a little bit about the guy, and I've never really thought of him as the closer makeup type. I think Coda Glover was kind of born and put on the earth to pitch in the back of the bullpen and has that kind of makeup. So I wanted it to be Glover from Jump Street. It wasn't. They didn't want to put that much on his plate. Sean Kelly would have been the easy answer, but he can't pitch back-to-back and doesn't have the same durability with the two TJs as those other guys. So I understand why they did what they did, trying to see if Treinen could do it, but it didn't work. And Glover, to me, in the ninth, Kelly in the eighth, with Blake Treinen kind of in, come in, get you a double play, get out of a jam, pitch to contact, and get someone to beat the ball on the ground kind of role, I think is probably the most common sense approach here. I wish they would have gone to it earlier and maybe wouldn't have lost Treinen for as long as they did or had any of the issues that they had. However, you know, most of the bullpen problems, I think, are bigger than just those couple of guys. I mean, Joe Blanton has been awful and really hadn't found himself. Eddie Romero has been inconsistent, and I don't think he's given them what they wanted. His role's been expanded because Sammy Solis is hurt as a power lefty. So, you know, he's pitching more than you'd like as a guy that was available at this point of his career for a reason. I mean, there weren't that high of an expectation. I don't think when he showed up at spring training, people didn't think, you know, this is a guy that's going to pitch 65 times this year, which he's on pace to do right now, I would say. So I like Glover in the ninth. I think he's the best closer they've got on the roster right now. I think he should be the guy getting their chances. And for me, I'm just frustrated it took this long to get to that realization. I don't know why they were afraid to put that on his plate earlier.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Like you say, I mean, he's just got such a warrior mentality. He was built to be in the eighth or the ninth inning for sure.
Yeah, you kind of see it. He's done it in the minors, and he's got the stuff. He's got, you know, 95, 96, kind of heavy bowling ball that he throws toward home plate. But I just think sometimes teams overthink things. You know, well, we don't want to ask him to do that right away early in the year. Well, if you're going to have him do it at some point, you have until July to figure out if you have the guy on the roster or not. Just do it in mid-April. What's the difference between mid-May or mid-April? And I know he was on the DL for a short time, so they could say, well, maybe that hindered their ultimate plan. But the Treinen thing didn't really make sense to me. So I don't know how it is, you know, already almost June now, and they've already basically used three different guys as closers. They've used, but how many they basically figuratively named as closer? Because Sean Kelly had that run doing it as well. So it's just been a weird start to the season. And it's more a groceries problem that, you know, that they don't have the players than it is a cooking problem, in my opinion. But they're also just not doing a very good job cooking.
All right. Well, let me flip you and talk a little bit about the offense. So, Ryan Zimmerman is probably playing, you know, better than I think any of us, even in our wildest expectations, is playing. And conversely, I want to get your take on Trey Turner, who's probably playing about as poorly as we could have anticipated as well. What are your thoughts on both players?
First to Zim, I mean, I'm just thrilled for the guy. He's a hard worker, and he puts a lot into the game like the rest of the guys, frankly, on the Nationals do. But you know, he wasn't rewarded over the last few years with success and health, and he became an easy punching bag. I know I fall victim like everyone else to the frustrations of basically what a guy makes and hearing all the time about how much he's going to help and contribute and then not seeing him do it. And that can be maddening. And I think because of that, there wasn't animosity from fans necessarily, but it's just easy to hear your name come up negatively. And for him to be having the year that he is, it's just so great for him. I mean, he's really put a lot into it. So I'm happy for Ryan Zimmerman. I think what you're seeing is, you know, he's carried over the ability to barrel balls that he had last year. Everyone talked about his exit velocity. He's added to that, you know, the ability to put balls in the air. You know, the launch angle hasn't changed statistically as much as maybe you'd think, but I think he's more cognizant, and he's a cerebral guy, and he talked to Daniel Murphy, who is a big fan graphs and statistical analysis guy, and I do think that for Zim, you know, he's hitting with a little bit better luck, but As he said, last year was a bad year. He had a few straight seasons where he just wasn't 100%. I think moving over from third, it's taken some time, but has really helped him as well, not having to worry about, you know, a part of his game that had become something that was very mental. And I think he's locked in. You know, normally you can see when he's going the other way to right center with power and elevated pitches are being squared up and turned around. You know, he's grooving, and that's really been the case start to finish this season so far. So far as Trey Turner goes, I'm not particularly surprised, to be honest with you, by this year. I think the expectations on him were immense. I think kind of unrealistic. I saw a few people talking about him as an MVP before the season started. I thought that that was a little bit ludicrous. This is what happens. The league makes adjustments. You come up and you terrorize the National League, and he did last year, hitting almost, you know, 340 and having the success that he did. And now you've got to make adjustments as well. There's swings and misses to his game, by the way. You know, you look back at the minors last year, he struck out some. In the big leagues, he struck out plenty last year. So he's not your prototypical leadoff guy. He's also being thrown into the top of the order and asked kind of to set the table and set the pace and see a lot of pitches. Well, when you've got a little bit of a long swing from time to time, when you're strikeout prone, and I think he can be, and now you're being told get deep into counts, work counts, see pitches, that's a hard thing. So I'm not worried about him at all. There's 50 problems with the Nationals, you know, him not hitting as much as I would have liked is like number 47 on that list. He's played brilliant defensively, which is a bigger deal to me. And you know, when he gets on, he's still an absolute terror on the base paths. So I think he's going to be just fine. I think by the end of the year, he's probably going to hit, you know, in the high 270s or the mid 280s. And that's just fine with me. I'd like to see him draw a few more walks and be a little bit more patient.
Yeah, good call. This may be an unfair question to ask you, but I just know how tied in you are in DC sports. Have you heard any scuttlebutt behind the scenes about Zimmerman having an injury the last year or two? Because it just makes too much sense that, goodness, his swing, and he just looks so much more alive in the field. And I know some of that, you start playing better and, you know, your mojo starts going better. But have you heard any scuttlebutt? Because I haven't.
Well, I mean,
at all.
I don't think there was an official injury to speak of, but I mean, you know about all the injuries he's had. I mean, there's nothing hidden about them. He was on the DL one time after another, even in a much healthier year last year. But, you know, there were times with the plantar fascia where he was, you know, off of his feet or not in the lineup. I mean, this is unequivocally the healthiest he's been in several seasons. But I don't think it's that. I mean, I talked to Zim about last year, and I kind of started the conversation by saying, hey, you know, last year you weren't 100%. And he basically said, you know, everyone keeps wondering what was wrong last year. He's like, I just had a bad year. And it was also, in addition to being bad, because I'm not letting him off the hook, you know, it wasn't great. But he wasn't lucky. I mean, you go back and look at batting average balls in play, and you look at how hard he was hitting the ball. I mean, that happens from time to time. Now, it doesn't normally happen for an entire season, but I think last year was kind of a sum of all fears, as bad as it can get type year. Whereas when you're not lucky, when you're hitting the ball hard and running into outs, when you're not completely healthy and you're not playing well, what does it look like? And the floor for him is last season. You know, what we've seen in the first few months of this year is probably the ceiling and the opposite of that.
All right. Well, last question I have for you on the Nats. Let's assume that they make Grant Paulson the general manager going ahead of the trade deadline. What are you doing to overhaul, or if not overhaul, this roster ahead of the trade deadline?
Yeah, if I was the GM, which I like the idea of that. Thank you, Ryan. I would go get Greg Holland, who is closing games out in Colorado right now, and I would trade for him as my closer. Now, the Rockies, as of this moment, are one of the better teams in the National League. Bud Black's doing a hell of a job. I don't think they'll be there come the deadline, and I don't think they're a viable contender. So my guess is they'd be willing to sell, particularly on a guy they kind of brought in who's had a recent injury history and have gotten a lot more out of than they would have anticipated. So he'd be my closer. This is a guy who's closed into the World Series before in Kansas City, has pitched in postseason games. I think he's terrific. There's three or four relievers I could throw at you that I like, but he would just be one of them that would be a closer. And then I would go get myself a power setup man, maybe his former teammate, Kelvin Herrera with the Kansas City Royals. Someone like that who throws, you know, mid to high 90s and is a legitimate eighth, seventh inning arm. I would make those two trades. I wouldn't have to give up Victor Robles, ideally. I would pretty much be willing to do anything else in the minor leagues. And I would get those two relievers, combine them with Kota Glover and whoever else that is the hot arm at that time. You know, ideally Blake Treinen's pitching well, and Blake Sean Kelly's back to his old ways, and Sammy Solis is in the bullpen and throwing. And I don't know if Matt Albers will have regressed to being mediocre at that point, or if he'll still pitch well. But at that point, I can build a bullpen around those two guys for the stretch run in the playoffs that I think would be very effective into the postseason. And for me, that would be my number one priority. If I had any issues with pitching health between now and then, I would add that to my list and go get myself a veteran kind of back of the rotation starter. Not anybody all that effective at going 8-9 innings at a time, obviously, but just someone who can go 6 innings and compete and give you, you know, think Edwin Jackson, Dan Heron more than Max Scherzer. So someone you bring in and kind of eat some frames and competes and helps you get to the playoffs, even though you're not going to need that guy a whole lot come October, ideally. But those would be my priorities. You know, I'm going to wait and see on Michael Taylor. I think he's played well enough that as of this moment, I wouldn't add center fielder to that list. You know, as long as he can play plus defense and not be a complete liability at the plate and not strike out 40% of the time and hit 215, I think I could kind of live with him. And so far, he's actually exceeded my expectations since taking over for Eaton.
Yeah, I think that's a great point on Michael A. is, you know, you keep giving him a chance until he's kind of proven he doesn't deserve it anymore. And he's playing like, yeah, you know, he's earned at least a chance for another, you know, 30 games until the trade deadline.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyways.
He's been, I don't want to say terrific, but he's been close to it. I mean, he really has been impressive. And, you know, he helps the pitching staff a lot. He's a sterling defensive player most of the time in center.
Grant, I know we're a little limited on the time, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you a Caps question, having you on, goodness, probably only a couple of weeks after just another Game 7 heartbreak, and that's probably not even strong enough of a word. But we have the expansion draft coming up. We have an offseason that's in flux. I know, I think 10, 11 players are free agents or restricted free agents. Just kind of what do you see going forward with the Caps this offseason?
So it's a great question. I think there's a lot of balls in the air here. The first thing you mentioned was the expansion draft. You know, there's a chance that they leave one of the guys that we like a lot unprotected and they get plucked. You know, I would not be shocked if a guy like Philip Grubauer ends up the goaltender in Vegas and is plucked by George McPhee. That wouldn't surprise me. Maybe it's a young defenseman if they decide they can't protect everyone. You know, and a guy like a Nate Schmidt or a Dmitry Orlov, who I'd imagine they'd be able to protect before that. But you know, they may lose someone as an RFA. As far as the unrestricted, or excuse me, as an expansion draft player acquisition for the Vegas Knights. That said, you know, they're RFAs, the guys that need to be paid, the younger guys that, you know, I label the Evgeny Kuznetsov group. I'm not worried about, you know, in hockey, for those people that don't track the off seasons that closely, very rarely does a guy get signed to an offer sheet. It's almost like legal collusion where teams just know what they can and can't and shouldn't do. It's weird. For as far as the off season goes, I think they're going to lose Carl Alsner, their unrestricted free agent. I'm not sure how much of an offer or fight they're going to put to keep him. So he's probably out. I think that they're going to lose Kevin Shattenkirk. I don't know if he goes to the Rangers like everyone assumes he's going to or not, but I don't think they're going to scrounge up the money to keep him either. One guy I think they make a run at re-signing is TJ Oshie. If I had to guess right now, I would assume that they do re-sign him, but I think it's close, and I think that there's a chance that his market grows enough that, you know, that could be a bidding war and they could decide they want to sit that out and lose all three of their biggest free agents. That wouldn't shock me. If they did that, I would expect them to bring back Justin Williams, who's a free agent as well. If they kept Oshie, I don't think they'd bring back Williams. They wouldn't have the same need to do that. So that's some thoughts on some of their big key free agents. A guy like Daniel Winnick on the cheap is a fourth liner and a PKer who's a free agent I'd like to see retained as well. The big question for me is, do they get creative at all? Because this is an option that they have, Ryan, is, you know, and make a trade or try to move one of their big contracts. See Brooks Orpik. You know, Orpik's interesting. Everyone says that no one will take on his contract, but I don't necessarily think that that's just a lock. I mean, we say that about sports all the time. This guy is stuck here for years. if a team wants a veteran defenseman and views him as someone that could, you know, throw an A on his sweater and bring him in, you know, I would be willing to talk to that team. Wouldn't rule it out. Same with John Carlson. You know, John Carlson makes a lot of money. He's a very popular player and did some good things the last couple seasons. I would be okay with the Capitals talking about trades, you know, with veterans. I think all hands on the table and on deck this offseason. So he'd be a guy. If you could move his salary in a deal where all of a sudden you'd free up some money for getting that Oshie deal done or getting a Shattenkirk deal done if you wanted to keep him as more of an offensive player on the blue line. So I just think right now it looks like they don't have many options and that they're going to lose a lot of their key free agents. However, I think that they could get maybe cute and tweak some things that we're not seeing right now and free up more space. So look out for that, because Brian McClellan's been masterful over the last couple of off seasons.
Yeah, as unaggressive as it felt like George McPhee was, it feels like kind of the opposite with McClellan in town.
That's true. It really is true.
Well, Grant, I think this is a good place for us to kind of cut our interview here, although I have probably 200 more questions I could ask you. We'll have to get you on later again. But spot here for your plugs where people can find you on Twitter, social media, your show, obviously, and Sirius and everything in between.
Yeah, you can go to at Grant H. Paulson on Twitter is where I do my complaining about sport and film mostly. But you can check me out there. And then the show's on every day from 106.7, the Fan's DC studios. We're live 10 to 2 on the Fan, Grant and Danny, with my buddy Danny Ruyer. And that's pretty much what you need to know. If you like prospects, minor league baseball, I do a show called Minors and Majors on Sirius XM on Sunday mornings you can check out. And I anchor their draft coverage to the Major League Baseball drafts coming up in a couple weeks. But that's kind of the lay of the land.
Well, Grant, big fan of your show. Must listen on Minors and Majors as well. That's a great show on Sirius as well. So thank you so much for joining me, and I hope we can be talking in the fall when the Caps have remade their roster and the Nationals are hopefully in the World Series.
Sounds good. Let's do it. My pleasure, Ryan. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one, and congrats again on your wonderful news in your personal life.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And that was episode 99 of the Nats GM Show with Grant Paulson from 106.7 The Fan and Sirius XM Radio and many other places. Obviously a huge fan of his work. I think we've all kind of seen him grow up and become just a media mogul here in the D.C. area. So thank you to him very much. It's always a pleasure to get to talk to him and get his take on D.C. sports, particularly the Nationals. And we even got a little Caps talk in there for our Caps fans in the audience. So thank you for that. Thanks to Grant. Thank you, Josh, for editing and producing this. And thank you for listening. We are done for this week. Bye for now.
The Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. Baron of the Baseball Podcast. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. Yeah. The Baron, speaking for the awareness. Truth has been spoken, the people say it's apparent. Wake up every day to the voice of the leader. The home run, strike out, the Baron, the teacher. I am a natural, my podcast has been the national. Bryce Harper power, Ken Griffey with attitude. No more than most, I am built for the stage. Every time I speak facts without turning the page, let me explain. I'm like Babe Ruth, I call the shots. Speaking to all my people, this message will never stop. Home run, every show, bringing in every fact. This feeling will overcome and I'm never turning it back. The Baron, the people's podcast and his win. The benefactor of benefit, know the truth is within. The Baron, speaking for awareness. The truth has been spoken. The people always say it's apparent, you feel me? The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The Baron, speaking for the awareness. Truth has been spoken, the people say it's apparent. Wake up every day to the voice of the leader. The home run, strike out, the Baron, the teacher. I am a natural, my podcast has been the national. Bryce Harper power, Ken Griffey with attitude. No more than most, I am built for the stage. Every time I speak facts without turning the page, let me explain. I'm like Babe Ruth, I call the shots. Speaking to all my people, this message will never stop. Home run, every show, bringing in every fact. This feeling will overcome and I'm never turning it back. The Baron, the people's podcast and this win. The benefactor of benefit, know the truth is within. The Baron, speaking for awareness, the truth has been spoken. The people always say it's apparent, you feel me? The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that.